Blind Alley, read by William Dufresne. Only once in galactic history was an intelligent race of non-humans discovered. Essays on History by Lagurn Veer. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces to Ludin Antioch, Chief Public Administrator, A-8. Subject: Civilian Supervisor of Cepheus 18, Administrative Position as. References. A. Act of Council 2515 of the year 971 of the Galactic Empire, entitled Appointment of Officials of the Administrative Service, Methods for Revision of. B. Imperial Directive JA-2374, dated 243-975-GE. 1. By authorization of reference, A. You are hereby appointed to the subject position. The authority of said position as civilian supervisor of Cepheus 18 will extend over non-human subjects of the Emperor, living upon the planet under the terms of autonomy set forth in reference B. 2. The duties of the subject position shall comprise the general supervision of all non-human internal affairs, coordination of authorized government investigating and reporting committees, and the preparation of semi-annual reports on all phases of non-human affairs. C. Morley, Chief, Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 12-977-GE. Ludin Antioch had listened carefully, and now he shook his round head mildly.
Friend, I'd like to help you, but you've grabbed the wrong dog by the ears. You'd better take this up with the Bureau.
Tomor Zamo flung himself back into his chair, rubbed his beak of a nose fiercely, thought better of whatever he was going to say, and answered quietly,
"Logical, but not practical. I can't make a trip to Trantor now. You're the Bureau's representative on Cepheus 18. Are you entirely helpless?"
"Well, even as civilian supervisor, I've got to work within the limits of Bureau policy."
"Good!" Zemo cried. "Then tell me what Bureau policy is." "I head a scientific investigating committee under direct imperial authorization with, supposedly, the widest powers, yet at every angle in the road I am pulled up short by the civilian authorities with only the parrot shriek of Bureau policy to justify themselves. What is Bureau policy? I haven't received a decent definition yet."
Antioch's gaze was level and unruffled. He said,
"As I see it, and this is not official, so you can't hold me to it, Bureau policy consists in treating the non-humans as decently as possible."
"Then what authority are they?"
"Shh! No use raising your voice. As a matter of fact, His Imperial Majesty is a humanitarian and a disciple of the philosophy of Aurelian. I can tell you quietly that it is pretty well known that it is the Emperor himself who first suggested that this world be established. You can bet that Bureau policy will stick pretty close to Imperial notions. And you can bet that I can't paddle my way against that sort of current."
"Well, my boy," the physiologist's fleshy eyelids quivered, "if you take that sort of attitude, you're going to lose your job." "No, I won't have you kicked out. That's not what I mean at all. Your job will just fade out from under you, because nothing is going to be accomplished here."
"Really? Why?"
Antioch was short, pink, and pudgy, and his plump-cheeked face usually found it difficult to put on display any expression other than one of bland and cheerful politeness. But it looked grave now.
"You haven't been here long. I have."
Zamo scowled.
"Mind if I smoke?"
The cigar in his hand was gnarled and strong and was puffed to life carelessly. He continued roughly,
"There's no place here for humanitarianism, Administrator. You're treating non-humans as if they were humans, and it won't work. In fact, I don't like the word non-human. They're animals."
"They're intelligent,"
interjected Antioch softly.
"Well, intelligent animals, then. I presume the two terms are not mutually exclusive. Alien intelligence is mingling in the same space won't work anyway."
"Do you propose killing them off?"
"Galaxy, no!"
He gestured with his cigar.
"I propose we look upon them as objects for study, and only that. We could learn a good deal from these animals if we were allowed to. Knowledge, I might point out, that would be used for the immediate benefit of the human race. There's humanity for you. There's the good of the masses, if it's this spineless cult of Aurelian that interests you."
"What for instance, do you refer to?
To take the most obvious. You have heard of their chemistry, I take it.
Yes, Antioch admitted. I have leafed through most of the reports on the non-humans published in the last 10 years. I expect to go through more.
Oh, well. Then all I need say is that their chemical therapy is extremely thorough. For instance, I have witnessed personally the healing of a broken bone, or what passes for a broken bone with them, I mean, by the use of a pill. The bone was whole in 15 minutes. Naturally, none of their drugs are any earthly use on humans. Most would kill quickly. But if we found out how they worked on the non-humans, on the animals...
Yes, yes, I see the significance.
Oh, you do? Well, come, that's gratifying. A second point is that these animals communicate in an unknown manner.
Telepathy. The scientist's mouth twisted as he ground out,
Telepathy, 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 might as well say witch brew. Nobody knows anything about telepathy except its name. Oh, well, what is the mechanism of telepathy? What is the physiology and the physics of it? I would like to find out, but I can't. Bureau policy, if I listen to you, forbids.
Antioch's little mouth pursed itself. But, pardon me, doctor, but I don't follow you. How are you prevented? Surely the civil administration has made no attempt to hamper scientific investigation of these non-humans. I cannot speak for my predecessor entirely, of course, but I myself...
No direct interference has occurred. I don't speak of that. But by the galaxy, Administrator, we're hampered by the spirit of the entire setup. You're making us deal with humans. You allow them their own leader and internal autonomy. You pamper them and give them what Aurelian's philosophy would call rights. I can't deal with their leader.
Why not?
Because he refuses to allow me a free hand. He refuses to allow experiments on any subject without the subject's own consent. The 2 or 3 volunteers we get are not too bright. It's an impossible arrangement.
Antioch shrugged helplessly. Zemo continued.
In addition, it is obviously impossible to learn anything of value concerning the brains, physiology, and chemistry of these animals without dissection, dietary experiments, and drugs. You know, Administrator, scientific investigation is a hard game. Humanity hasn't much place in it.
Ludin Antioch tapped his chin with a doubtful finger. Must it be quite so hard? These are harmless creatures, these non-humans. Surely dissection. Perhaps if you were to approach them a bit differently, I have the idea that you antagonize them. Your attitude might be somewhat overbearing.
Overbearing! I am not one of these whining social psychologists who are all a fad these days. I don't believe you can solve a problem that requires dissection by approaching it with what is called the correct personal attitude in the cant of the times.
I'm sorry you think so. Socio-psychological training is required of all administrators above the grade of A4. Zamo withdrew his cut of a cigar from his mouth and replaced it after a suitably contemptuous interval.
Then you'd better use your bit of technique on the Bureau. You know, I do have friends at the Imperial Court.
Well, now, I can't take the matter up with them. Not baldly. Basic policy does not fall within my cognizance, and such things can only be initiated by the Bureau. But, you know, we might try an indirect approach on this. He smiled faintly. Strategy?
What sort?
Antioch pointed a sudden finger, while his other hand fell lightly on the rows of gray-bound reports upon the floor just next to his chair. Now, look, I've gone through most of these. They're dull, but contain some facts. For instance, when was the last non-human infant born on Cepheus 18? Zamo spent little time in consideration.
Don't know. Don't care, either.
But the Bureau would... There's never been a non-human infant born on Cepheus 18. Not in the 2 years the world has been established. Do you know the reason? The physiologist shrugged.
Well, too many possible factors. It would take study.
All right, then. Suppose you write a report.
Reports? I've written 20!
Write another. Stress the unsolved problems. Tell them you must change your methods. Harp on the birth rate problem. The Bureau doesn't dare ignore that. If the non-humans die out, someone will have to answer to the Emperor. You see, Zamo stared, his eyes dark.
That will swing it?
I've been working for the Bureau for 27 years. I know its ways.
I'll think about it.
Zamo rose and stalked out of the office. The door slammed behind him. It was later that Zamo said to a co-worker,
He's a bureaucrat in the first place. He won't abandon the orthodoxies of paperwork, and he won't risk sticking his neck out. He'll accomplish little by himself, yet maybe more than a little if we work through him.
From Administrative Headquarters, Cepheus 18, to Bureau for the Outer Provinces. Subject, Outer Province Project 2563, Part 2. Scientific Investigations of Non-Humans of Cepheus 18. Coordination of References. A. Bureau for the Outer Provinces Letter CEP-N-CM-JG 100132, dated 302-975-GE. B. Ad HQ CEF 18 Letter AA-LA-MN, dated 140-977-GE. Enclosure. 1. Psi Group 10, Physical and Biochemical Division, Report, entitled Physiologic Characteristics of Non-Humans of Cepheus 18, Part 11, dated 172-977-GE. 1. Enclosure 1, included herewith, is forwarded for the information of the Bureau for Outer Provinces. It is to be noted that Section 12, Paragraphs 1 through 16 of Enclosure 1, concern possible changes in present Bureau for the Outer Provinces' policy with regard to non-humans with a view to facilitating physical and chemical investigations at present proceeding under authorization of reference A. 2. It is brought to the attention of the Bureau for the Outer Provinces that reference B has already discussed possible changes in investigating methods, and that it remains the opinion of Ad HQ CEF 18 that such changes are as yet premature. It is nevertheless suggested that the question of non-human birth rate be made the subject of a Bureau for the Outer Provinces project assigned to the Ad HQ CEF 18 in view of the importance attached by Psi Group 10 to the problem, as evidenced in Section 5 of Enclosure 1. L. Antioch, Supery, Ad HQ CEF 18, 174-977. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces. 2. Ad HQ CEF 18. Subject, Outer Province Project 2563, Scientific Investigations of Non-Humans of Cepheus 18, Coordination of. Reference. A. Ad HQ CEF 18 Letter AA-LA-MN, dated 174-977-GE. 1. In response to the suggestion contained in paragraph 2 of reference A, it is considered that the question of the non-human birth rate does not fall within the cognizance of Ad HQ CEF 18. In view of the fact that Psi Group 10 has reported said sterility to be probably due to a chemical deficiency in the food supply, all investigations in the field are relegated to Psi Group 10 as the proper authority. 2. Investigating procedures by the various Psi groups shall continue according to the current directives on the subject. No changes in policy are envisaged. C. Morley, Chief, Bureau of the Outer Province, 186-977-GE. Part 2. There was a loose jointed gauntness about the news reporter which made him appear somberly tall. He was Gustav Bannard, with whose reputation was combined ability, two things which do not invariably go together despite the maxims of elementary morality. Ludin Antioch took his measure doubtfully and said,
"There's no use denying that you're right, but the Psi Group report was confidential. I don't understand how..."
"It leaked," said Bannard callously. "Everything leaks."
Antioch was obviously baffled, and his pink face furrowed slightly.
"Then I'll just have to plug the leak here. I can't pass your story. All references to Psi Group complaints have to come out. You see that, don't you?"
"No."
Bannard was calm enough.
"It's important, and I have my rights under the Imperial Directive. I think the Empire should know what's going on."
"But it isn't going on," said Antioch despairingly. "Your claims are all wrong. The Bureau isn't going to change its policy. I showed you the letters.
You think you can stand up against Zamo when he puts the pressure on?
The newsman asked derisively.
I will, if I think he's wrong.
If,
stated Bannard flatly. Then, in a sudden fervor,
Now, Chuck, the Empire is something great here. Something greater by a good deal than the government apparently realizes. They're destroying it. They're treating these creatures like animals.
Really?
Began Antioch weakly.
Don't talk about Cepheus 18. It's a zoo. It's a high-class zoo with your petrified scientists teasing those poor creatures with their sticks, poking through the bars. You throw them chunks of meat, but you case them up. I know. I've been writing about them for 2 years now. I've almost been living with them.
Zamo says...
Ah, Zamo!
This with hard contempt. Zamo says, insisted Antioch with worried firmness, that we treat them too like humans as it is. The newsman's straight, long cheeks were rigid.
Zamo is rather animal-like in his own right. He's a science worshipper. We can do with less of them. Have you read Aurelian's works?
The last was suddenly paused.
Yes, I understand the Emperor.
The Emperor tends towards us. That is good. Better than the hounding of the last reign.
I don't see where you're heading.
These aliens have much to teach us. You understand? It is nothing that Zamo and his Psi group can use. No chemistry, no telepathy. It's a way of life, a way of thinking. The aliens have no crime, no misfits. What effort is being made to study their philosophy? Or to set them up as a problem in social engineering?
Antioch grew thoughtful, and his plump face smoothed out.
It is an interesting consideration. It would be a matter for psychologists.
No good. Most of them are quacks. Psychologists point out problems, but their solutions are fallacious. We need men of Aurelian, men of the philosophy.
But look here. We can't turn Cepheus 18 into a metaphysical study.
Why not? It can be done easily.
How?
Forget your puny test tube peerings. Allow the aliens to set up a society free of humans. Give them an untrammeled independence and allow an intermingling of philosophies.
Antioch's nervous response came.
That can't be done in a day.
We can start in a day.
The administrator said slowly,
Well, I can't prevent you from trying to start.
He grew confidential. His mild eyes thoughtful.
You'll ruin your game, though, if you publish Psi Group 10's report and denounce it on humanitarian grounds. The scientists are powerful.
And we of the philosophy as well.
Yes, but there's an easy way. You needn't rave. Simply point out that the Psi Group is not solving its problems. Do so unemotionally, and let the readers think out your point of view for themselves. But take the birth rate problems, for instance. There's something for you. In a generation, the non-humans might die out for all science can do. Point out that a more philosophical approach is required, or pick some other obvious point. Use your judgment, eh?
Antioch smiled ingratiatingly as he rose.
But for the galaxy's sake, don't stir up a bad smell.
Bannard was stiff and unresponsive.
You may be right.
It was later that Bannard wrote in a capsule message to a friend.
He is not clever by any means. He is confused and has no guiding line through life. Certainly utterly incompetent in his job. But he is a cutter and a trimmer, compromises his way around difficulties and will yield concessions rather than risk a hard stand. He may prove valuable in that. Yours in Aurelian.
From Ad HQ, CEF 18, to Bureau for the Outer Provinces. Subject, birth rate of non-humans on Cepheus 18, news report on. References, A, Ad HQ, CEF 18 letter, AA-LA/MN, dated 174/977GE. B, Imperial Directive, JA-2374, dated 243/975GE. Enclosures 1-G Bannard News Report, Dateline Cepheus 18, 201/977GE. 2-G. Banner News Report. Dateline Cepheus 18-203-977-GE. 1. The sterility of non-humans on Cepheus 18, reported to the Bureau for the Outer Promises in reference A, has become the subject of news reports to the Galactic Press. The news reports in question are submitted herewith for the information of the Bureau for the Outer Promises as enclosures 1 and 2. Although said reports are based on material considered confidential and closed to the public, the news reporter in question maintained his rights to free expression under the terms of reference B. 2. In view of the unavoidable publicity and misunderstanding on the part of the general public now inevitable, it is requested that the Bureau for the Outer Provinces direct future policy on the problem of non-human sterility. L. Antioch, Supervisor, at HQ, CEF 18, 209-977-GE. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces to at HQ, CEF 18. Subject, Birth Rate of Non-Humans on Cepheus 18, Investigation of. References. A. At HQ, CEF 18 Letter, AA-LA-MN, dated 209-977-GE. B. At HQ, CEF 18 Letter, AA-LA-MN, dated 174-977-GE. 1. It is proposed to investigate the causes and the means of precluding the unfavorable birth rate phenomena mentioned in references A and B. A project is therefore set up entitled Birth Rate of Non-Humans on Cepheus 18, Investigation of, to which, in view of the crucial importance of the subject, a priority of AA is given. 2. The number assigned to the subject project is 2910, and all expenses incidental to it shall be assigned to appropriation number 18-78. C. Morilli, Chief, Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 223-977-GE. Part 3. If Tomor Zamo's ill humor lessened within the grounds of Psi Group 10 Experimental Station, his friendliness had not thereby increased. Antioch found himself standing alone at the viewing window into the main field laboratory. The main field laboratory was a broad court, set at the environmental conditions of Cepheus 18 itself for the discomfort of the experimenters and the convenience of the experimentees. Through the burning sand and the dry, oxygen-rich air, there sparkled the hard brilliance of hot, white sunlight. And under the blaze, the brick-red non-humans, wrinkled of skin and wiry of build, huddled in their squatting positions of ease by ones and twos. Zamo emerged from the laboratory. He paused to drink water thirstily. He looked up, moisture gleaming on his upper lip.
"Like to step in there?"
Antioch shook his head definitely.
"No, thank you. What's the temperature right now?"
120 if there were shade. And they complain of the cold. It's drinking time now. Want to watch them drink?"
A spray of water shot upward from the fountain in the center of the court, and the little alien figures swayed to their feet and hopped eagerly forward in a queer, springy half-run. They milled about the water, jostling one another. The centers of their faces were suddenly disfigured by the projection of a long and flexible fleshy tube, which thrust forward into the spray and was withdrawn dripping. It continued for long minutes. The bodies swelled and the wrinkles disappeared. They retreated slowly, backing away, with the drinking tube flicking in and out, before receding finally into a pink, wrinkled mass above a wide, lipless mouth. They went to sleep in groups in the shaded angles, plump and sated.
"Animals," said Zamo with contempt.
"How often do they drink?" asked Antioch.
"As often as they want. They can go a week if they have to. We water them every day. They store it under their skin. They eat in the evenings. Vegetarians, you know."
Antioch smiled chubbily.
"It's nice to get a bit of first-hand information occasionally. Can't read reports all the time."
"Yes,"
noncommittally. Then,
"What's new? What about the lacy pants boys on Trantor?"
Antioch shrugged dubiously.
"You can't get the Bureau to commit itself, unfortunately. With the Emperor sympathetic to the Aurelianists, humanitarianism is the order of the day. You know that." There was a pause in which the administrator chewed his lip uncertainly. But there's this birth rate problem now. It's finally been assigned to AT-HQ, you know. And AA priority, too. Zamo muttered wordlessly. Antioch said, You may not realize it, but that project will now take precedence over all other work proceeding on Cepheus 18. It's important. He turned back to the viewing window and said thoughtfully, with a bald lack of preamble, Do you think those creatures might be unhappy?
Unhappy?
The word was an explosion. Well, then, Antioch corrected hastily, maladjusted. You understand, it's difficult to adjust an environment to a race we know so little of.
Say, did you ever see the world we took them from?
Well, I've read the reports.
Ah, reports!
Infinite contempt.
I've seen it. This may look like a desert out there to you, but it's a watery paradise to those devils. They have all the food and water they can get. They have a world to themselves with vegetation and natural water flow instead of a lump of silica and granite where fungi were forest grown in caves and water had to be steamed out of gypsum rock. In 10 years, they would have been dead to the last beast, and we saved them. Unhappy? Gah! If they are, they haven't the decency of most animals.
Well, perhaps. Yet, I have a notion.
Oh, a notion. What is your notion?
Zamo reached for one of his cigars. It's something that might help you. Why not study the creatures in a more integrated fashion? Let them use their initiative. After all, they did have a highly developed science. Your reports speak of it continually. Give them problems to solve.
Such as?
Well, Antioch waved his hands helplessly. Whatever you think might most help. For instance, spaceships. Get them into the control room and study their reactions.
Why?
Asked Zamo with dry bluntness. Because the reaction of their minds to tools and controls adjusted to the human temperament can teach you a lot. In addition, it will make a more effective bribe, it seems to me, than anything you've yet tried. You'll get more volunteers if they think they'll be doing something interesting.
That's your psychology coming out. Sounds better than it probably is. I'll sleep on it. Where would I get permission, in any case, to let them handle spaceships? I've none at my disposal, and it would take a good deal longer than it was worth to follow down the line of red tape to get one assigned to us.
Antioch pondered, and his forehead creased slightly. It doesn't have to be spaceships. But even so, if you would write up another report and make the suggestion yourself, strongly, you understand, I might figure out some way of tying it up with my birth rate project. A AA priority can get practically anything, you know, without questions. Zamo's interest lacked a bit, even of mildness.
Maybe. Meanwhile, I have some basal metabolism tests in progress, and it's getting late. I'll think about it. It's got its points.
From AT-HQ CEPH-18 to Bureau for the Outer Provinces. Subject, Outer Province Project 2910, Part 1, Birth Rate of Non-Humans on Cepheus 18, Investigation of. Reference, A, Bureau for the Outer Provinces Letter, CEPH-N-CM/CAR, 115097, 223/977GE. Enclosure, 1, Psi Group 10, Physical and Biochemical Division Report, Part 15, dated 220/977GE. 1. Enclosure 1 is forwarded herewith for the information of the Bureau for the Outer Provinces. 2. Special attention is directed to Section 5, Paragraph 3 of Enclosure 1, in which it is requested that a spaceship be assigned to Psi Group 10 for use in expediting investigations authorized by the Bureau for the Outer Provinces. It is considered by AT-HQ CEPH-18 that such investigations may be of material use in aiding work now in progress on the subject project, authorized by reference A. It is suggested, in view of the high priority placed by the Bureau for the Outer Provinces upon the subject project, that immediate consideration be given the Psi Group's request. L. Antioch, Supervisor, AT-HQ CEPH-18, 240/977GE. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 2. AT-HQ CEPH-18. Subject, Outer Province Project 2910, Birth rate of non-humans on Cepheus 18. Investigation of. Reference. A. Ad HQ Cep 18 letter. AA-LA/MN. Dated 240/977GE. 1. Training ship AN-R-2055 is being placed at the disposal of Ad HQ Cep 18 for use in investigation of non-humans on Cepheus 18 with respect to the subject project and other authorized outer provinces projects, as requested in Enclosure 1 to Reference A. 2. It is urgently requested that work on the subject project be expedited by all available means. C. Morley, Head, Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 251/977GE. Chapter 4. The little bricky creature must have been more uncomfortable than his bearing would admit to. He was carefully wrapped in a temperature already adjusted to the point where his human companions steamed in their open shirts. His speech was high-pitched and careful.
"I find it damp, but not unbearably so at this low temperature."
Antioch smiled. "It was nice of you to come. I had planned to visit you, but a trial run in your atmosphere out there..."
The smile had become rueful.
"It doesn't matter. You other worldlings have done more for us than ever we were able to do for ourselves. It is an obligation that is but imperfectly returned by the endurance on my part of a trifling discomfort."
His speech seemed always indirect, as if he approached his thoughts sidelong, or as if it were against all etiquette to be blunt.
Gustav Bannard, seated in an angle of the room with one long leg crossing the other, scrawled nimbly and said,
You don't mind if I record all this?"
The Cepheid non-human glanced briefly at the journalist.
"I have no objection."
Antioch's apologetics persisted.
"This is not a purely social affair, sir. I would not have forced discomfort on you for that. There are important questions to be considered, and you are the leader of your people."
The Cepheid nodded.
"I am satisfied your purposes are kindly. Please proceed."
The administrator almost wriggled in his difficulty in putting thoughts into words.
"It is a subject," he said, "of delicacy, and one I would never bring up if it weren't for the overwhelming importance of the question. I am only the spokesman of my government."
"My people consider the Otherworld government a kindly one."
"Well, yes, they are kindly. For that reason, they are disturbed over the fact that your people no longer breed."
Antioch paused and waited with worry for a reaction that did not come. The Cepheid's face was motionless, except for the soft, trembling motion of the wrinkled area that was his deflated drinking tube. Antioch continued,
"It is a question we have hesitated to bring up because of its extremely personal angles. Non-interference is my government's prime aim, and we have done our best to investigate the problem quietly and without disturbing your people. But, frankly, we...
have failed?"
finished the Cepheid, at the other's pause.
"Yes. Or at least we have not discovered a concrete failure to reproduce the exact environment of your original world, with, of course, the necessary modification to make it more livable. Naturally, it is thought there is some chemical shortcoming, and so I ask your voluntary help in the matter. Your people are advanced in the study of your own biochemistry. If you do not choose, or would rather not..."
"No, no. I can help."
The Cepheid seemed cheerful about it. The smooth, flat planes of his loose-skinned, hairless skull wrinkled in an alien response to an uncertain emotion.
"It is not a matter that any of us would have thought would have disturbed you otherworldlings. That it does is but another indication of your well-meaning kindness. This world we find congenial, a paradise in comparison to our old. It lacks in nothing. Conditions such as now prevail belong in our legends of the Golden Age."
"Well..."
"But there is a something you may not understand. We cannot expect different intelligences to think alike."
"I shall try to understand." The Cepheid's voice had grown soft, its liquid undertones more pronounced.
We were dying on our native world, but we were fighting. Our science, developed through a history older than yours, was losing, but it had not yet lost. Perhaps it was because our science was fundamentally biological rather than physical, as yours is. Your people discovered new forms of energy and reached the stars. Our people discovered new truths of psychology and psychiatry and built up a working society free of disease and crime. There is no need to question which of the two angles of approach was the more laudable, but there is no uncertainty as to which proved more successful in the end. In our dying world, without the means of life or sources of power, our biological science could but make the dying easier. And yet, we fought. For centuries past, we had been groping toward the elements of atomic power, and slowly the spark of hope had glimmered that we might break through the two-dimensional limits of our planetary surface and reach the stars. There were no other planets in our system to serve as stepping stones, nothing but some 20 light-years to the nearest star, without the knowledge of the possibility of the existence of other planetary systems, but rather of the contrary. But there is something in all life that insists on striving, even on useless striving. There were only 5,000 of us left in the last days. Only 5,000. And our first ship was ready. It was experimental. It would probably have been a failure. But already we had all the principles of propulsion and navigation correctly worked out.
There was a long pause, and the Cepheid's small black eyes seemed glazed in retrospect. The newspaper man put in suddenly from his corner,
"And then we came."
"And then you came,"
the Cepheid agreed simply.
"It changed everything. Energy was ours for the asking. A new world, congenial and indeed ideal, was ours even without asking. If our problems of society had long been solved by ourselves, our more difficult problems of environment would suddenly solved for us no less completely."
"Well?" urged Antioch.
"Well, it was somehow not well. For centuries, our ancestors had fought towards the stars, and now the stars suddenly proved to be the property of others. We had fought for life, and it had become a present handed to us by others. There is no longer any reason to fight. There is no longer anything to attain. All the universe is the property of your race."
"This world is yours," said Antioch gently.
"By sufferance. It is a gift. It is not ours by right."
"You have earned it, in my opinion." And now the Cepheid's eyes were sharply fixed on the other's countenance.
"You mean well, but I doubt that you understand. We have nowhere to go save this gift of a world. We are in a blind alley. The function of life is striving, and that is taken from us. Life can no longer interest us. We have no offspring, voluntarily. It is our way of removing ourselves from your way."
Absent-mindedly, Antioch had removed the fluoroglobe from the window seat and spun it on its base. Its gaudy surface reflected light as it spun, and its 3-foot-high bulk floated with incongruous grace and lightness in the air. Antioch said,
"Is that your only solution, sterility?"
"We might escape still,"
whispered the Cepheid.
"But where in the galaxy is there place for us? It is all yours."
"Yes. There is no place for you nearer than the Magellanic Clouds, if you wished independence. The Magellanic Clouds..."
"And you would not let us go by yourselves. You mean kindly, I know."
"Yes, we mean kindly, but we could not let you go."
"It is a mistaken kindness."
"Perhaps. But Could you not reconcile yourselves? You have a world.
It is something past complete explanations. Your mind is different. We could not reconcile ourselves. I believe, Administrator, that you have thought of all this before. The concept of the blind alley we find ourselves trapped in is not new to you.
Antioch looked up, startled, and one hand steadied the floral globe.
Can you read my mind?
It is just a guess. A good one, I think.
Yes, but can you read my mind? The minds of humans in general, I mean. It is an interesting point. The scientists say you cannot, but sometimes I wonder if it is that you simply will not. Could you answer that? I am detaining you unduly, perhaps.
No. No.
But the little Cepheid drew his enveloping robe closer and buried his face in the electrically heated pad at the collar for a moment.
You otherworldlings speak of reading minds. It is not so at all, but it is assuredly hopeless to explain.
Antioch mumbled the old proverb.
One cannot explain sight to a man blind from birth.
Yes, just so. This sense, which you call mind-reading, quite erroneously, cannot be applied to us. It is not that we cannot receive the proper sensations. It is that your people do not transmit them, and we have no way of explaining to you how to go about it. There are times, of course, of great concentration or emotional tension on the part of an otherworldling, when some of us who are more expert in this sense, more sharp-eyed, so to speak, detect vaguely something. It is uncertain, yet I myself have at times wondered.
Carefully, Antioch began spinning the floral globe once more. His pink face was set in thought, and his eyes were fixed upon the Cepheid. Gustav Bannard stretched his fingers and reread his notes, his lips moving silently. The floral globe spun, and slowly the Cepheid seemed to grow tense as well, as his eyes shifted to the colorful sheen of the globe's fragile surface. The Cepheid said,
"What is that?"
Antioch started, and his face smoothed into an almost chuckling placidity.
"This? A galactic fad of 3 years ago, which means that it is a hopelessly old-fashioned relic this year. It is a useless device, but it looks pretty. Bannard, could you adjust the windows to non-transmission?"
There was the soft click of a contact, and the windows became curved regions of darkness, while in the center of the room the floral globe was suddenly the focus of a rosy effulgence that seemed to leap outward in streamers. Antioch, a scarlet figure in a scarlet room, placed it upon the table and spun it with a hand that dripped red. As it spun, the colors changed with a slowly increasing rapidity, blended and fell apart into more extreme contrasts. Antioch was speaking in an eerie atmosphere of molten, shifting rainbow.
"The surface is of a material that exhibits variable fluorescence. It is almost weightless, extremely fragile, but gyroscopically balanced, so that it rarely falls, with ordinary care. It is rather pretty, don't you think?"
From somewhere the Cepheid's voice came.
"Extremely pretty."
"But it has outworn its welcome, outlived its fashionable existence."
The Cepheid's voice was abstracted.
"It is very pretty."
Bannard restored the light at a gesture, and the colors faded. The Cepheid said,
"That is something my people would enjoy."
He stared at the globe with fascination. And now Antioch rose.
"You had better go. If you stay longer, the atmosphere may have bad effects. I thank you humbly for your kindness."
"I thank you humbly for yours."
The Cepheid had also risen. Antioch said,
"Most of your people, by the way, have accepted our offers to them to study the makeup of our modern spaceships. You understand, I suppose, that the purpose was to study the reactions of your people to our technology. I trust that conforms with your sense of propriety."
You need not apologize. I myself have now the makings of a human pilot. It was most interesting. It recalls our own efforts and reminds us of how nearly on the right track we were.
The Cepheid left, and Antioch sat, frowning.
Well, he said to Bannard, a little sharply, you remember our agreement, I hope. This interview can't be published.
Bannard shrugged.
Oh, very well.
Antioch was at his seat, and his fingers fumbled with a small metal figurine upon his desk.
What do you think of all this, Bannard?
Well, I'm sorry for them. I think I understand how they feel. We must educate them out of it. The philosophy can do it.
You think so?
Yes.
We can't let them go, of course.
Oh, no, out of the question. We have too much to learn from them. This feeling of theirs is only a passing stage. They'll think differently, especially when we allow them the completest independence.
Maybe. What do you think of the floral globes, Bannard?
He liked them. It might be a gesture of the right sort to order several thousand of them.
The galaxy knows they're a drug on the market right now, and cheap enough.
Well, sounds like a good idea, said Bannard.
The Bureau would never agree, though. I know them.
The newsman's eyes narrowed.
But it might just be the thing. They need new interests.
Yes? Well, we could do something. I could include your transcript of the interview as part of a report and just emphasize the matter of the globes a bit. After all, you're a member of the philosophy, and it might have influence with important people, whose word with the Bureau might carry much more weight than mine. You understand?
Yes, mused Bannard. Yes.
From Ad HQ CEF-18 to Bureau for the Outer Provinces. Subject: Outer Province Project 2910, Part 2. Birth Rate of Non-Humans on Cepheus 18, Investigation of. Reference: A. Bureau for the Outer Provinces, Letter CEP-N-CM, / CAR, 115097, dated 223/977GE. Enclosure. 1. Transcript of conversation between L. Antioch of AdHQ CEF-18 and Ni San, High Judge of the Non-Humans on Cepheus 18. 1. Enclosure 1 is forwarded herewith for the information of the Bureau for the Outer Provinces. 2. The investigation of the subject project undertaken in response to the authorization of reference A is being pursued along the new lines indicated in Enclosure 1. The Bureau for the Outer Provinces is assured that every means will be used to combat the harmful psychological attitude at present prevalent among the non-humans. 3. It is to be noted that the High Judge of the Non-Humans on Cepheus 18 expressed interest in floral globes. A preliminary investigation into this fact of non-human psychology has been initiated. L. Antioch, Supervisor, at HQ CEF-18, 272/977GE. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 2, at HQ CEF-18. Subject, Outer Province Project 2910. Birth Rate of Non-Humans on Cepheus 18, Investigation of. Reference, A. At HQ CEF-18 Letter, AA-LA/MN, dated 272/977GE. 1. With reference to Enclosure 1 of Reference A, 5,000 fluoroglobes have been allocated for shipment to Cepheus 18 by the Department of Trade. 2. It is instructed that AdHQ CEF-18 make use of all methods of appeasing non-humans' dissatisfaction, consistent with the necessities of obedience to imperial proclamations. C. Morley, Chief, Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 283/977GE. Chapter 5. The dinner was over, and the wine had been brought in, and the cigars were out. The groups of talkers had formed, and the captain of the merchant fleet was the center of the largest. His brilliant white uniform quite outsparkled his listeners. He was almost complacent in his speech.
The trip was nothing. I've had more than 300 ships under me before this. Still, I've never had a cargo quite like this. What do you want with 5,000 fluoroglobes on this desert by the galaxy?
Ludin Antioch laughed gently. He shrugged. For the non-humans, it wasn't a difficult cargo, I hope.
No, not difficult, but bulky. They're fragile. I couldn't carry more than 20 to a ship, with all the government regulations concerning packing and precautions against breakage. But it's the government's money, I suppose.
Zamo smiled grimly.
Is this your first experience with government methods, Captain?
Galaxy, no!
Exploded the spaceman.
I try to avoid it, of course, but you can't help getting entangled on occasion. And it's an abhorrent thing when you are, and that's the truth. Ah, the red tape, the paperwork is enough to stunt your growth and curdle your circulation. It is a tumor, a cancerous growth on the galaxy. I'd wipe out the whole mess.
Antioch said, you're unfair, Captain. You don't understand.
Yeah, well, now, as one of these bureaucrats.
And he smiled amiably at the word.
Suppose you explain your side of the situation, Administrator.
Well, now, Antioch seemed confused. Government is a serious and complicated business. We've got thousands of planets to worry about in this empire of ours, and billions of people. It's almost past human ability to supervise the business of governing without the tightest sort of organization. I think there are something like 400 million men today in the Imperial Administrative Service alone, and in order to coordinate their efforts and to pool their knowledge, you must have what you call red tape and paperwork. Every bit of it, senseless though it may seem, annoying though it may be, has its uses. Every piece of paper is a thread binding the labors of 400 million humans. Abolish the administrative service, and you abolish the empire, and with it interstellar peace, order, and civilization.
Ah, come,
said the captain.
No, I mean it.
Antioch was earnestly breathless.
The rules and system of the administrative setup must be sufficiently all-embracing and rigid so that in case of incompetent officials, and sometimes one is appointed, you may laugh, but there are incompetent scientists and newsmen and captains, too. In case of incompetent officials, I say, little harm will be done. For at the worst, the system can move by itself.
Yes,
grunted the captain sourly.
And if a capable administrator should be appointed, he is then caught by the same rigid web and is forced into mediocrity.
Not at all, replied Antioch warmly. A capable man can work within the limits of the rules and accomplish what he wishes.
How?
Asked Bannard.
Well,
Antioch was suddenly ill at ease. One method is to get yourself an A-priority project, or double A, if possible. The captain leaned his head back for laughter, but never quite made it. For the door was flung open, and frightened men were pouring in. The shouts made no sense at first. Then,
Sir, the ships are gone. These non-humans have taken them by force.
What? All?
Every one. Ships and creatures.
It was 2 hours later that the four were together again. Alone in Antioch's office now. Antioch said coldly,
They've made no mistakes. There's not a ship left behind, not even your training ship, Zamo, and there isn't a government ship available in this entire half of the sector. By the time we organize a pursuit, they'll be out of the galaxy and halfway to the Magellanic Clouds. Captain, it was your responsibility to maintain an adequate guard. The captain cried,
It was our first day out of space. Who could have known?
Zamo interrupted fiercely.
Wait a while, Captain. I'm beginning to understand. Antioch?
His voice was hard.
You engineered this.
I?
Antioch's expression was strangely cool, almost indifferent.
You told us this evening that a clever administrator got an A-priority project assigned to accomplish what he wished. You got such a project in order to help the non-humans escape.
I did. I beg your pardon, but how could that be? It was you yourself in one of your reports that brought up the problem of the failing birth rate. It was Bannard here whose sensational articles frightened the Bureau into making a double-A priority project out of it. I had nothing to do with it.
You suggested that I mention the birth rate,
said Zamo violently.
Did I? Said Antioch composedly.
And for that matter,
roared Bannard suddenly.
You suggested that I mention the birth rate of my articles!
The three ringed him now and hemmed him in.
Antioch leaned back in his chair and said easily, "I don't know what you mean by suggestions. If you are accusing me, please stick to evidence, legal evidence. The laws of the Empire go by written, filmed, or transcribed material, or by witness statements. All my letters as administrator are on file here at the Bureau and at other places. I never asked for an A-priority project. The Bureau assigned it to me, and Zamo and Bannard are responsible for that. In print, at any rate." Zamo's voice was an almost inarticulate growl.
"You hoodwinked me into teaching the creatures how to handle a spaceship!"
"It was your suggestion."
"I have your report proposing they be studied in their reaction to human tools on file. So has the Bureau. The evidence, the legal evidence, is plain. I had nothing to do with it."
"Nor with the globes?"
demanded Bannard. The captain howled suddenly.
"You had my ships brought here purposely! 5,000 globes! You knew it would require hundreds of craft!"
"I never asked for globes," said Antioch coldly. "That was the Bureau's idea, although I think Bannard's friends of the philosophy helped that along."
Bannard fairly choked. He spat out,
"You were asking that Cephian leader if he could read minds! You were telling him to express interest in the globes!"
"Come now. You prepared the transcript of the conversation yourself, and that, too, is on file. You can't prove it." He stood up.
"You'll have to excuse me. I must report to the Bureau."
At the door, Antioch turned. "In a way, the problem of the non-humans is solved, even if only to their own satisfaction. They'll breed now and have a world they've earned themselves. It's what they wanted. Another thing, don't accuse me of silly things. I've been in the service for 27 years, and I assure you that my paperwork is proof enough that I have been thoroughly correct in everything I have done. And, Captain, I'll be glad to continue our discussion of earlier this evening at your convenience, and explain how a capable administrator can work through red tape and still get what he wants." It was remarkable that such a round, smooth baby face could wear a smile quite so sardonic. From Bureau for the Outer Provinces, 2, Ludin Antioch, Chief Public Administrator, A-8. Subject: Administrative Service, Standing In. Reference: A. AdServ Court Decision 22874-Q, dated 1/978 GE. 1. In view of the favorable opinion handed down in reference A, you are hereby absolved of all responsibility for the flight of non-humans on Cepheus 18. It is requested that you hold yourself in readiness for your next appointment. R. Horprit, Chief, AdServ, 15/978 GE.